Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
All right. Well, we've talked a lot on this show about what some people are calling the next great economic bubble in America, student loan debt. It's now at more than $1.1 trillion and counting.
A few years ago, President Obama pushed to revamp a federal loan forgiveness program, saying that even he and the First Lady know firsthand about the big burden of big student debt.
By the time we both graduated from law school, we had, between us, about $120,000 worth of debt. You know, we combined and got poor together.
All right, so a little laugh line there from the president, but the issue is, of course, no laughing matter, especially in light of the news this month about new problems with the debt forgiveness programs championed by President Obama. The federal pay-as-you-earn program has been so popular that enrollment has soared almost 40% in the last 6 months. That's 1.3 million Americans with $72 billion in student loan debt. And remember, we're talking about a debt forgiveness program, which means that after some time, it's the federal government, aka you, the U.S. taxpayer, that's left holding the bag. And the costs have grown so quickly that the Obama administration now wants to rein it in. So joining me now to talk more about this is Beth Akers. She's a fellow in the Brookings Institution's Brown Center on Education Policy. She's also co-author of a new report on federal income-based repayment programs. Welcome to the program, Beth.
Thanks for having me.
So I wonder if you could first briefly describe this pay-as-you-earn program and just sort of the outline on how it works.
Sure. So pay-as-you-earn is part of a set of programs designed to help students repay their student loan debt with really less pain. So, you know, you tend to think of the old model of a loan, sort of like a mortgage that we're all used to, as being a fixed payment every month for a certain number of years. And this is the traditional model of student loans and for a long time how federal student loans were structured. And that's still the default today. But starting in 2007, these new programs were introduced so that monthly payments, rather than being fixed based on the term and the amount borrowed, fluctuated with a borrower's income. So essentially protecting the borrower from facing an unaffordable payment in a month that they were only partially employed or facing low earnings for other reasons.
So you'd be paying a percentage of your income rather than a fixed
exactly.
number. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And then what happened after 10 or 20 years?
Right.
Or what
so
would
once
happen?
So if borrowers continue to participate in these programs for 10 years for public sector employees or 20 years for private sector employees, the balance of their student loan debt is forgiven. And it's important to note that this is federal student debt, not private student loans.
Okay, so forgiven to them, meaning that someone's got to pay it back, which is the federal government that assumes the debt.
Exactly.
Okay, so let me ask you, in your report, you find that you know, at first blush, a lot of people, of course, we're seeing at least 1.3 million Americans love this program because of the ever-increasing cost of higher education, that it's able to, having this debt forgiveness program 10 to 20 years after they graduate, it's able for them to, say, take jobs in lower-paying jobs in the public sector than they would otherwise, you know, take if they were straddled with this debt for their entire lives. But you say that it's also introduced a kind of moral hazard. Moral hazard to whom?
So moral hazard essentially meaning that there's incentive for people to borrow more than they necessarily need to. So you can see that borrowers maybe are taking more risks by going into professions that won't necessarily pay off or going to institutions that are more expensive than they need to be. And so essentially the government's on the hook to pay for it if it goes sour in the end.
Okay. And we're seeing that there are possibly even certain schools, I'm seeing Georgetown Law, that have cottoned on to these debt forgiveness programs and are basically marketing themselves as effectively, correct me if I'm wrong, but effectively free for students because they could enroll in programs such as Pay As You Earn?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what they've done is said to their students, if you go into the public sector following graduation, we'll basically finance the loan for you until you get to the period of forgiveness, and then the entire amount that you borrowed will be forgiven. But the student makes no payments during that time, essentially taking full advantage of the benefit available to them.
I see. So it seems like Georgetown Law School isn't the only institution savvy enough to to see these forgiveness programs in this way, and we're likely to see more. But when the president first talked about the plan, I believe he mentioned that the idea would be that it would cost the federal government $1.7 billion a year, but you estimate that it could be upwards of $14 billion a year. Why the big difference?
Right. So I don't want to emphasize too much the estimates that we have, because as you see, if you looked into our report, there are some limitations with the data that we used. But what's important is that we don't have a good grasp, anyone really, on what the overall cost of the programs are going to be. And I think the administration has changed multiple times what they've implicitly stated about the cost of the program. You know, what we're more interested in pressing on is this issue that the forgiveness portion of the program, despite the limitations of our analysis, we're confident that this is going to be an overwhelmingly expensive program for the federal government.
Okay, but you also then recommend, you have recommendations for how the overall goals of the program in terms of making debt repayment more manageable for students could be achieved without the spiraling costs. What are a couple of those recommendations?
Well, that's exactly right. So, you know, these programs are called income-based repayment, meaning that monthly payments should be based on your income. And, you know, there's really two parts of these programs. There's that the payments are fluctuating with income, but also the forgiveness piece. And what we point out is that this very expensive forgiveness piece is maybe unnecessary for the program to function as an effective safety net, because the fluctuation of the monthly amount due based on income should be sufficient to protect borrowers in any given month from having to make a payment that they can't afford.
Mm. And what about the pushback that the government, as it's trying to rein in these programs, might get from students saying, hey, look, without forgiveness, period, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to be a social worker. I'm going to have to go into private practice of some kind. And so, you know, using my education towards a public good isn't going to be possible unless you forgive the debt outright.
Well, I think there are more effective ways of subsidizing employment in the public sector. And if, you know, the government prioritizes that and makes it a public policy issue, I think we can do that through wage subsidies or something that's a little bit less costly than public service loan forgiveness.
Well, Beth Akers is a fellow at the Brookings Institution Brown Center on Education Policy. You can find a link to her report that she co-authored on student loan programs at RadioBoston.org. Beth, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, former Massachusetts State Representative Carl Shortino on living with HIV and his new role heading up the advocacy group, the AIDS Action Committee. I'm Lisa Mullins.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.